This is Bill Tiller of Tiller.org. You're listening to BBSRadio.com. Don't forget to tune in to The Infinite Consciousness with Eva Herr every Sunday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Enjoy.
Hello, everyone. This is Eva Herr, and thanks for listening to Infinite Consciousness tonight. Tonight, we're going to have Dr. Stan Kapuscinski, and we're going to talk about his book, Say a Goodbye to Your Post-Personality Disordered Individual. How are you, Dr. Kapuscinski?
I'm just fine, Eva. How are you tonight?
Good. Thanks for being with us tonight.
It's a pleasure.
I appreciate it. Interesting book. So before we get started, tell us a little bit about you so my listeners know from where you come from and how you got into this.
Well, I understand you're up in Atlanta. I'm down here in Florida on the West Coast. I'm a psychiatrist. I've been a psychiatrist for a number of years. I'm what's called board certified, which means I'm a specialist in that area. I formerly lived up in Connecticut, now in Florida, lived in Australia, and did some stints in other parts of the world as well, working as a psychiatrist. The book came about mainly out of talking with people that would come in as patients of mine. They were concerned about their relationships, sometimes at work, sometimes within their family, sometimes with husbands, boyfriends, girlfriends, and were depressed, anxious, upset that they were the cause of the relationship not going well. And you can imagine with families, this went on for years. And what eventually I saw was that it wasn't the people themselves that were the problem. One always thinks it takes two to get into have a problem, but in many cases it wasn't. It was the person, the other person who was the unchanging, unyielding, very manipulative, very using kind of person who essentially emotionally blackmailed my patients to thinking they were
like
at
that.
Fault. And once they were able to see that, they were able to get on with their lives in one form or another. Sometimes just being able to tolerate the other person in a whole new way, or just getting out of the relationship if they could. But it was going from, as a part of the title is, you know, like eliminating misery from your life. It was feeling more in control, seeing how you were manipulated, and standing a step back from that, and with a better perspective, better control, you feel happier.
Right. I've been there. I know exactly what you're talking about.
There you go.
It's not a very fun road to be there. So if you could just start out by giving us a better idea. You've got in your book, you describe several different kinds of personality disordered individuals, if you describe those a little bit, so people will know what they're looking for.
Certainly. We're talking about, they're called personality disordered individuals, or PDIs. In general, in psychiatry, in the mental health field, we have diagnoses of just that, personality disorders. And these are people we all have personalities, that's given. And the personality, your personality is what makes you up as a person, what defines you, your behavior's like, how you might react in a certain situation. People with personality disorders are that way, only they, what we say, are maladaptive. They are kind of stuck in a certain behavior from which they just can't change. They can't get themselves out of, nor do they want to. So it's taking a normal person, but their personality is one which is kind of directed, their behavior is directed at, if I might say, using other people, getting lots of attention, antisocial, more, let's say, not nice ways. Now, there are about 11 of these defined in psychiatry. If I took five of them, five are what we call the more social types. These are the people you meet every day who can cause you the most problems. And it is anything from, a not too nice person at the bank or at the gas station, which, you know, you just come and go and you sort of hopefully let it pass, to people at work, people in your life every day. These five, as I say, are more social. They're more out, they're kind of predators, if you will. Some of the others are a little bit more loners. They're a little weird, and they kind of use people in another way, but you know, if you come across them, you sort of just let them be, and they're not too much. And these five are, the first one is called the passive-aggressive personality. And I'm sure your listeners have heard, if not all of them, there's a couple of them. That passive-aggressive is a phrase you tossed around a bit. And it basically means a person who is challenging, provocative, and aggressive, but he does it in a very, very indirect way. He, or she, but it's mostly males. He tries to get a rise out of you, either a guilty rise out of you or an angry rise. And I should point out that all personality disorders, the PDIs, work on your feelings. They play you. And they play just regular, normal people. They're on their emotions to get certain responses, and then they use these responses instead against you. So the passive aggressive guy, and a typical example I give is the if you're walking down a corridor and it's not too wide, and there's a guy sitting there in a chair and his legs are across and you can't get by. And most people, you walk up to someone like that, and they look up, and they say, excuse me, move their feet, and you pass, say thank you, and off you go. Well, you know, life goes on. These people are the ones, they just sort of sit there, and you're standing, and you clear your throat, or you say, excuse me, and they look up, and they make this big dramatic gesture, like it's you're disrupting the entire universe in their life, and move finally, and it's a big deal. And the effect is supposed to be either you walk on saying, you know, what a jerk, and you're a little angry, or, you know, you might feel, if you're so inclined, a little guilty, you made the guy move, who knows what was going on, etc. These are people that are late usually, undermine things, complain a lot, negative, they're always blaming you. This is a... I had one woman, her husband was this way, and he would literally throw the plate of mashed potatoes against the wall, saying, you know, they were just too lumpy. And this woman was so brainwashed that, you know, she should be a good cook. I mean, she wanted to be a good cook, a good mom, a good wife, and she literally felt, yeah, well, he works hard and it's my fault, because he just kept using the guilt against her. That's that form.
Can I ask you a question here?
Oh, please.
Is this something that is conditioned in childhood, or is this some kind of physiological thing like neurotransmitter levels being off, or both?
Well, I think it's probably a little bit of both. I mean, you certainly see this form running in families. You know, it's the kind of thing one person in the family uses it. I mean, you pick up a certain behavior and it's carried on. By the same token, in other cases, it's just some of the other personalities, the PDIs that we see, it seems to be more hardwired into the brain. The old way of looking at it was that the person in their development got stuck. The older psychiatrists that were... So, you know, everybody goes through developmental phases, of course. And, I mean, everybody knows if you've had a child of the terrible twos. And, you know, and it just comes on at 2 years old. A child starts saying no a lot and gets contrary and obstinate and stubborn. And by the time they hit three, it starts hopefully to disappear. And then they go on what's called the social stage, where they start to share. The 2-year-olds don't share. 3-year-olds begin to share, and it's not something necessary. You know, mom and dad may say, "Well, you got to share your toys." It just doesn't happen, and it's not going to happen for a 2-year-old. It's going to happen when they get 3 because of their development. But the passive-aggressive, for example, it's thought, and it's partially so. They kind of get stuck in that stubborn, no, I'm not going to give in to anybody's faith. And in some ways it is. Some ways they're just big, stubborn 2-year-olds who are grown up. It's a little bit of both in some situations.
What role would self-esteem play and codependency, things like that, addiction?
Oh, God, that's a great question. For the person with a PDI, if you listen to them, they have no problems. So if you say they have low self-esteem, generally they will not admit that. Unless it's a way of, manipulating. Some of the other PDIs we can talk about use that. But in terms of their own self-esteem, deep down, they have a very, very poor self-esteem, and that's why they have to manipulate and use others to get lots of attention. It's basically, the more attention I get, the more I control others. That means I'm worth more. So it's like the more people applaud when I sit down, the more popular I am. And that's where their self-worth comes from, their self-esteem.
Do you think they really are really unaware that they have the problem, or do you think they know deep down and then ego gets in the way?
Well, ego, definitely the ego gets in the way. Deep down, it's like, I can't think of any movie right off, but it's one of those scenes in a movie, where the person's caught and, they're supposed to convey just a little insight that, they done wrong. And that could happen for 30 seconds to a minute. But then it's not. It's like Scarlett O'Hara, fiddly dee, tomorrow's another day. Off we go. And that's more. So they really don't. For the purposes of my book, they don't. Because one of the basic things about a PDI, personality disordered individual, and all of the ones I talk about, is that they don't change. There's nothing you can possibly do to get them to change in the relationship. Whatever goes wrong in the relationship, and believe me, it does go wrong, you, the other person, are meant to feel the bad guy. And even though they may say, the PDA may say they want to change, some come to therapy with that in mind, with they're saying that, but it's not really true. They don't change because they don't have to. If one person can't be their victim, there's another person that'll come along. And there's always somebody out there to snare. So it's basically, why change? These people are extremely good at what they do.
One thing, I've been there in my life, I guess everybody probably has, you've got a PDI quiz. How does someone, you get caught up in that almost codependent thing because you get stuck that you don't have any value and you're afraid to leave, and then you get this person that is got a disorder. How do you tell when it's the person or you really, truly?
Well, thank you for mentioning the question there. I do have a website. If your listeners are interested, it's stopyourmisery.com. Or the title of the book is Say Goodbye to Your PDI.com. So, but stopyourmisery.com seems to be a little bit more memorable.
Yeah.
And if your readers go on to that, it'll bring you to the main page. And then there's a little thing to click. It says take the quiz. And there are 25 questions that are yes or no about your relationship. And it's more key towards a personal relationship, although the book goes into relationships at work, as well as relationships if you're a professional, a doctor, a nurse, a mental health professional or counselor, a minister, a family counselor, the different people, these PDIs that come in, and how they can use you. But the 25 questions are mainly for personal, and it's there are things in general like, do you feel used? Do you feel like you never have the last word? Do you feel like even though they say they listen, they don't? Do you feel, as I said, you know, there's never any change in the relationship? Do you feel you bear the brunt of the problems and are made to feel that way? And the purpose of the quiz, and at the end, it's the usual, if you've got 20 yeses, then for sure this, you've got a PDI in your life. And if you have less than five, you're either lying to yourself or you're pretty darn lucky. But the idea of the book is, first of all, to get you to start being aware of, you already have that feeling inside you, something's not right, something isn't here, and boy, as much as I try to change things, nothing's getting better, and you're frustrated, you're upset, and most of the time people are thinking, well, what can I do that's going to help? What, you know, what can I read, what can I do? I'll say to people, you know, you can, do you get the feeling like it's the other person saying to you, what have you done for me today? And they'll say, yeah, what do you mean? And these PDIs are so desirous. They need to control you. They need that attention that they really, and manipulating you. That's what they don't ever see you as a person, because you have a relationship. You share things. You know, you're not always right. You're not always in charge. It's a give and take. They can't allow that, because they might lose your attention. They might lose you, and that's a member of the fan club, and they need to have as many as they can. So what they'll do, I'll say, well, you know, what have you done for me today? You know, and I say, well, you could have, you know, given a kidney and all your money and stayed home a month, and they'd say thank you, but it was like, well, but that was last month. Well, what are you doing today? And it's that kind of thing. You're being sucked dry. And no matter what you do, and the purpose of the book is, first, that you begin to see that these things are afoot, that there is that you're being used, your emotions are being manipulated, and to once you begin to see that, you hopefully step back a little bit and not allow that to happen. And with each of the personality disorders in the book, there are a list of behaviors that go on, how you feel when this is going on, and then what you can do and what you can't do, what you shouldn't be doing in terms of responses.
What can someone do? And particularly, I'm sure it would be a little bit different for men than it would be women, because women seem to get, you know, more emotionally involved. Have you found that?
Yes and no. There are indeed some, generally, yes. Women do get more emotionally involved in the relationship, the emotion side of the relationship. And yet, by the same token, two of the five PDIs that I talk about are mainly women. And they target men, and the men involved are very hurt, upset, and doing the same thing, caught up in, you know, what can I do to please her? What can I do to make this work? So it's a little bit, I guess, I agree with you, women are more, they consider the emotional side of the relationship more, but given these people, it goes back and forth.
I would kind of assume, I'm looking at your website, actually, but the women are the fatal attractions more so, and the ones who need your focus, and can't let you do anything else. And men would be more narcissisms and negative and blaming,
exactly.
I guess.
Exactly. That's exactly what you see. The women are the drama queens, the PDI. Everything is in extremes. You know, let's say you had a bad thunderstorm in Atlanta. I mean, they'd walk in the door and say, "My God, I almost died. The wind was blowing. I don't know how I got over here. I don't think I'll ever drive again. It was so ghastly. And I, you know, I'm not going to sleep for several nights. I'm going to have nightmares." And I mean, you say, heck, yeah, we have, these happen all the time. What's going on? They're usually very sexual, seductive. And what they play on in men is the rescuer type of thing. The men who, you know, I'm just poor little old me. I can't handle things. And you're the big, strong, handsome knight who's going to protect me from things. And they play into that kind of emotion very well with guys. And the guys get sucked in. They tell, "Here I am, darling. I'm going to protect you." And what happens, unfortunately, is the guy, this works for a little bit because that's part of the initial PDI and snaring you. And then all of a sudden it's like, well, you're not doing enough. You're not making enough money. You're not protecting me enough. You're not doing this. You're not doing that. And the guy's bewildered. Well, what the heck? Things were perfect, and now they're not. And they just keep trying and trying and trying. The other one is that Fatal Attraction. That was a movie a few years back where there's Michael Douglas got involved in a one-night stand with a very successful, beautiful woman, and found out that she, became murderous. These are people that latch onto you, and they play the lonesome, empty role, and again play the man to come and be there for them, to take care of them, to fill the emptiness in their lives. And in the beginning, they are the most perfect relationship you might have, and then it starts to fade. And again, it gets back to, you know, you're just inadequate. You're not enough. And if anything I can get across to your listeners is that sense of inadequacy is the place. That's where your self-esteem starts to ebb. And, you know, you feel, gee, I thought I was good, but I guess not. And I got to try harder. And I am inadequate. And it's what I'm saying in the book is, that is not so. That is an illusion. These people present an illusion. They use you, and that's what they play on. And it's not the way it is. You are inadequate. Look at how much you're trying to make it work. Look at how much you are putting into the relationship. That should say how good a person you are. The bottom line is, if they can't, PDIs never change, they also can never have a meaningful relationship. So it's like saying, you know, you'll never have one. And as hard as that is to admit, once you do and break away, it's like, come on, get on, be happy with your life. And it's not you who's the failure giving up, it's you who's being strong and saying, you know, I'm worth more than what I'm getting here.
That something flashed in my mind right when you said that. I'm going to imagine, because I've done divorce litigation for a part of my life, I would imagine that somebody that's a PDI, when you start realizing and start, like when you read your book and you start recognizing, oh, these things are applying to my life, and you have to get away, that you better do so with caution and care, I would imagine. Have you found that they get angrier or more vindictive or more controlling and try to make it harder, so that you need something like this book to give yourself hope and faith and get a support group?
Absolutely.
Does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense. PDIs, when confronted with their behavior, first they deny it. I mean, it's just typical example again, the passive aggressive. You know, you say, you know, you're always late. I've been waiting here an hour, and you're always late. and they'll deny it. Or let's another, and this happened, one woman, you know, she was wondering about her husband philandering, and she walks into the place she thought he was. He's in a bar. He's smooching with another woman. She goes up and confronts him with this. And his response is, you know, what would somebody say? Oh, my God. He says to her, how come you're not home with the kids? Completely avoiding his what's going on with him, and he's laying the blame on her. I mean, and she's recounting this, saying, you know, by now I realize, well, you know, what an idiot I was, and how I was used. So they deny it, but some of them can get very angry in responding, in their defensiveness. Some of the more fragile ones can't. I'm not saying violence necessarily, but they certainly can get argumentative and vindictive in one form or another, because what you're doing is throwing reality into their face. And as I say, you know, when you said earlier, do you think they're deep down? No. That's when you start disrupting this fantasy life, this dream they live, and they can't allow that to happen. So they've got, if you're, for example, going through a divorce and have to be more confrontative, then you might find a very angry situation because, again, the reality is being thrown in their face. Usually, they'll walk away because they don't want to hear it. They don't want their fantasy room disrupted. And they'll just find somebody else who's more believing and that they can take control over.
I would imagine, just from my experience, that if you have certain kinds of those personalities, that you better get your ducks in a row before you confront them first.
Yes. Yes. Up to a point.
I hate to say it that way, but I want people to get help on here, you know?
I know. You're absolutely right, up to a point. By the same token, whatever you say, you know, it's like will be used against you. No matter how true, just like the woman going in and catching this guy, he would, you know, deny it. He would blame her. He would turn it around. So no matter how much proof you have, let me put it this way. There's never a point where you say, look, this went on. Okay, can you admit to that, and let's just get on with things and on with our lives. That will never happen. They don't go that way. If they do, they may be like the what's called the antisocial PDI. You know, he'll basically find out what you want to hear and tell you. I mean, it's like used car salesmen. Hate to pick on them, but, you know, you ask them a question about a car, they're going to tell you everything positive, whether it's true or not. And so in that way, ducks in a row only work so far as they're just using you again to try to soothe you and calm you down. Mm-hmm. So no matter how much you got on them, it there's never a sense of accomplishment. And that's the help, if you will. If you confront, don't expect anything to happen. The confrontation is more for you to say, look, I just want you to know, and I want to convey to you, I'm doing this for me, that, you know, I think you're a real pain in the neck. I think, what, you're a liar, you're a cheat. For a woman, you know, you play me, you've been unfaithful to me, nothing is enough for you no matter what I do. You're insatiable in terms of what your needs are. And this is unacceptable, and I'm not going to allow it anymore. You know, and again, it's for you it's for your own benefit to do that than it is to expect anything you're going to change them. Again, they do not change, and that's a cardinal rule. I've been accused of writing a negative book, you know, that you're down on people, that you're labeling people who are hopeless, and what if these people want help? They don't want help. And yes, it's hopeless. I mean, do they ever change? They change insofar as adapt. say, if another example is the, I consulted in a prison system up north for a while and met these antisocial guys. These were con men, burglars, liars, cheats, whatever. And let's just say they went from robbing people by burglaring to going out and becoming used car salesmen or salesmen in some sort, or
getting
jobs.
Right, they can still do it in a legal way.
Yeah, how to make a buck legally. I mean, how to lie and cheat, but it's legal now, if you will. That may sound cynical, but that's what happens. They adapt. The drama queen, who's very sexual, and now she hits 50 or 65, and doesn't quite have those seductive powers anymore. She adapts. She relies more on her personality a little bit more smooth going.
I have two other question lines that I'd like to ask you about this that I just thought of. One of them I'd like to discuss would be physiology. You know, for example, norepinephrine, if you have excessive norepinephrine. And the other one would be people that have behaved this way and then had to face a dark night of the soul as a result of their behavior because their spouse left them, you know, gave them ultimatums and left them, you know, divorced them or whatever.
Right.
Do they change?
No.
I mean, I know that some people have these things, spiritual awakenings, when they hit bottom after behaving this way for so long, and that if they would just do something to make themselves better, they wouldn't have to go through all this dark night of the soul to begin with.
Well, you're right. You're right. But they, again, they don't see themselves as doing anything wrong. So now, when you talk like that, I think of some of the famous gospel people, ministers, that were caught in various ways, and you see them on TV. Or lately, let's say, what was it, the governor of New York caught having an affair with a prostitute.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and they come on, and the wife is behind them, and they admit their guilt. And, I mean, who was it, Jimmy Swagger, who was crying on TV with his pain and misery. You may see that as a dark night of the soul. I see that as they're just learning, they're adapting. They're just using now how to manipulate. What are Americans like? They like people who beg forgiveness and say they're sorry. I mean, what was that? The mayor of Washington, D.C., he was a cocaine user, and I mean, he was still reelected because, you know, he just come back and, you know, he admit he was wrong. I mean, you go and find Jesus, that's what you do.
Well, I'm not really talking about Jesus here.
Well, I say that more in terms of it's a front. It's a continued manipulation. I don't think they're not capable of having dark nights of the soul because they don't really have consciences in that regard, as you and I do. So for them to change, they adapt, but they never change. It's us who have to change, recognize it, and kind of move on.
Would you say it's more brought on by how they were raised as kids? In other words, we ought to pay attention how we're raising our kids.
Well.
Or do you think it's more of a chemical imbalance? Typically. I know it can be anything, but
if you're, let's say, that we'll take this antisocial. You asked me about the five. Let me just go through it. There was the passive aggressive, the antisocial, the narcissistic, the borderline, and the histrionic, the drama queen. Those are the five. Now, if you're brought up in a family where, let's just say, stealing and cheating is kind of looked upon as a way of life, and it's okay, philosophy, you're going to pick that kind of behavior up too. So that's, you know, is it nature or nurture? That's more nurture, raising your kids a certain way. But I mean, again, you talk to these people, you know, Jesus is wrong with them, they're going to say, well, who are you to tell me how to bring up my kids? It works for me. The histrionic, the drama queen, especially if you're young and pretty, I think you find early on that can work in your favor, and if you're so inclined. Now, is that, if you see that in your family and it works, you're going to use it. You see it works for other people, you are. But also, again, there are many beautiful women out there who are bright, who don't rely on that kind of behavior to navigate their way through the world. So I think there's a bit of the hard wiring there, the hereditary something in their system that precludes that. Narcissists frequently come from difficult upbringings where they might have been put down, or their dad was a narcissist, an egotist, and they were going to grow up and outdo it. So that's again a growing up exposure kind of thing to the growing up. So it depends, and certainly how you treat your kids obviously has a profound effect on the adult that springs forth later on in life.
Okay, what about, I don't mean to blow it off because I'm interested in that, but we got a few more minutes and I'm curious about this neurophysiological part with neurotransmitters.
Yes.
I'm so interested in that. If somebody has way too much norepinephrine, it's going to make them just feel awful on the inside. So is it worth having all of these chemicals tested? Could it possibly help someone's behavior, or is that kind of stuff all mind?
That is certainly the way the neurophysiology of the brain is going. From the medications that are used now in terms of trying to more specifically target parts of the brain that can be helped, where there are chemical imbalances. But in general, it's very difficult to, at this point in time, to measure these types of things. When you do, they can be, but first you have to realize that, like for epinephrine, adrenaline is the other term for that.
Thinking about norepinephrine.
Norepinephrine,
right.
Is adrenaline. It's a very similar chemical. It's, again, a stimulant in the body. So noradrenaline, norepinephrine, epinephrine, and adrenaline, they're all kind of the stimulants that get us going in some ways. But you have to realize that those chemicals in the brain are really separate from those in your body. So if you took a blood test or a urine test, it's not going to show anything. It's going to show only if you have a tumor in your body that's making large amounts of these chemicals. But to show that you have a high amount in your brain, and then you got to have what's called a spinal tap, where they put a needle into your back and they take out the spinal fluid. And even there, it doesn't really tell much. Some years ago, there was a test that was being popularized that your cortisol, which is another chemical, it's in the brain, it's in the body, was increased in that. It was increased unnecessarily in your brain fluid, and that meant you were depressed. Well, everybody knows they were depressed in the first place, so it was kind of a dumb test to do. But it really didn't prove out to be worth much. So to go into the brain and measure, and there are parts of the brain that have higher amounts of these chemicals than others. And quite frankly, we're talking about, 7 billion cells. I mean, a huge amounts. And we're really, I hate to say it, but it's still primitive in terms of knowing what's going on in the brain. Usually, we find it backwards. Many people have heard of Prozac by now, and that came out in 1988, a medicine for depression. And there were medicines around for depression long before that, and back into the 1950s. But what happens is they'll find some medicine, let's say, makes somebody less depressed. And they say, oh, isn't that interesting? Let's go back and find out why. and they find out that it was, for Prozac, it was this stuff called serotonin that was, it increases serotonin, so therefore it's low serotonin that causes depression. So the research is based kind of backwards. This works, so then this was low, and now it's higher, so I guess that causes the low amount must be depressed, because now you're not depressed anymore. Well, that's all well and good, and it did help to identify things in the brain, but then another medicine comes along that works on a chemical called dopamine, and it's an antidepressant. So it's like, oops, and then norepinephrine and epinephrine, there's another antidepressant that works on those. So the best we can say at this point is that all of these chemicals are, all these substances in the brain are involved, for example, with depression. They are all involved with anxiety, panic disorder, obsessive-compulsive disorder, schizophrenia, manic depression.
Are most PDIs depressed?
Say again?
Are most PDIs depressed?
No. They're just out there. They're depressed briefly when somebody comes against them and upsets their world a little. You know, they're depressed because you're upsetting their world, but they hunker down and, like I said, find other victims and tell themselves a story as to how. Now, that's the other thing I forgot to mention. They are always the victim. So no matter how bad they are, what they have done, they're the victim. Like that guy in the booth smooching with another babe when his wife walks in, he's the victim because his wife is not home minding the kids and he trusted her. That's how he would view this. He wouldn't view that he's, you know, cheating on his wife. He would see this as something like the guy who's late throws the mashed potatoes against the wall because, you know, they're lumpy. He's going to be victimized by this uncaring wife who doesn't appreciate all he's done for her. The drama queen, you know, she's going to yell at this guy and say, you know, she's going to kill herself in the morning because this guy didn't buy her the birthday present she felt she deserved, or wasn't going out, or wasn't giving her the attention, the constant attention she felt she needed. The narcissist, he's the victim of uncaring fans. You know, here he is, this wonderful, fabulous guy. Hollywood's full of them, you know. And, you know, if they get bad reviews, no matter how bad they are, they're victims of uncaring public, an insensitive group of people. So this is how it works. Now they don't have bad times.
All right, we got about 10 minutes. I'd like for you, if you would, to give us a few pointers what to do.
Okay.
And then I want you to spend a few minutes talking about, again, telling people where they can find you, where they can find your book, and.
I'll expand on that a lot. You can bet on that.
Talk about anything that you think I've left out.
Okay. Thank you. There are some basics, and let me just repeat these. The title of the book is Say Goodbye to Your PDI, Personality Disordered Individuals. Recognize people who make you miserable and eliminate them from your life for good. So it's directed for people who are in relationships that are not going well. And it's to help people look at the relationship. And if there are certain characteristics that on the website, stopyourmisery.com, you take the quiz, if you find you're in a relationship that has many of those characteristics where used and abused, not listened to, things don't change no matter what I do, for example. It's time to take stock of what's really going on. That PDIs use your emotions against you. They'll use, if you're a good person, they'll use your guilt that you want to be a good person. If you're a helper, a caring person, they're going to use that you should be caring more, that you should be helping more. if you were abused as a child, they're going to play on that and use that abuse against you. And it's taking time to look at how they keep doing this to you and look at how you feel. Everywhere in my book, it's how does this make you feel? When this thing happens, when this happens, how are you feeling? Look at your feelings and step back and see how those feelings are used against you. You might say, well, those feelings help me understand. They help you understand not the relationship, because that clearly hasn't gotten better. They help you understand how you're being used. And if you can step back and do that, that's really a very, very big thing to do. You are not the inadequate one. They're making you feel that way. And that really is. You know, you can say people can't make me feel a certain way, but that's hogwash. People can influence you and make you feel good, bad. You just think about it. Somebody does something for you, you can feel on top of the world, and you can feel down. You say, well, it's only if I let myself. Well, these people are very good at getting to you. Now, the primary thing I keep repeating in my book with all of the PDIs is that if it's not working, don't keep doing it. Now, that may seem very silly and kind of common sense, but you can't imagine how many people keep doing it. Keep saying, I'm going to talk to him this time, or I'm going to get this book, or I'm going to do this. I'm going to buy Dr. K's book and show him chapter 3, and he's going to read and say, geez, that's me. Thank you, darling. I didn't realize it. Doesn't work that way. They'll say, thank you, darling. I know 3 people who are just like this, and it's going to help me, boy, combat them. Boy, they kind of use me, the victim, all the time. So whatever you're doing, don't do it. So if you're arguing, don't argue. If you're not saying anything, say something. If you think you're getting, you know, don't. You mentioned codependent. Codependent is just encouraging them. It's saying, you know, I'm bearing the burden for this. I'm going to help you out of your problem. Well, you don't do that. It's they've got a problem, and they're not going to change it. This isn't alcoholism where somebody says, boy, I can't keep doing this. My life keeps going into the gutter. They don't say that. They just say, you know, you've got the problem, and why do you keep bothering with me? They'll say to you, you're negative. I don't want to be with a negative person. Or, boy, you're such a down person. Why should I even listen to you? Or, you know, damn it, you're an SOB. I don't know why I'm with you. You should be lucky you have me around. Like the guy that comes an hour late, you know, he's going to say, you should be lucky I even picked you up. And I mean, and that's what you listen to. How does that make you feel? You feel angry, you feel used, you feel guilty. Oh, maybe he's right. And say, step back and listen to that. The website again is stopyourmisery.com. On that is, there's a little questionnaire, there's information about the book, information about me, there's some interviews I've done, there's a couple of TV things that explain a little bit about, more about the book. There is a place to go if people are interested in buying the book. It'll direct you to the publisher, HCI Communications, Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble.
You tell them how to spell your last name, just so they, in case they need that.
It is K-A-P, as in Peter, U-C-H-I-N-S-K-I.
So Dr. Stan Kapuscinski.
That's right? Correct, yep.
Thank you. We're out of time, Dr. Kapuscinski, but I thank you for coming on and appreciate your work.
Eve, it was a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. Good night.
Good night.
Where would $5,000 per week take you? Discover the exact details of a simple and proven system that quickly puts $5,000 to $10,000 in many students' pockets every week. What's most amazing is that there are almost no computer skills required, and you can start pulling in cash automatically within just a few hours. We are absolutely convinced that our proven system will create massive wealth for virtually anyone, and we'll prove it. Go to bbscashflow.com now and get all the details. That's bbscashflow.com.